What are the important takeaways from our study of the book of Job? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Tonson, your host and study guide author for our final lesson on the book of Job. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Jen Ogden, Associate Pastor of the Walla Walla University Church.
Now, isn't it nice that we've been with you all quarter, Alden?
This has been wonderful. You folks have been very obedient slaves.
It's been a good journey.
I just wanted to tweak you a little bit, so anyway, you go ahead.
That's good. Now, I wrote down four takeaways, but I want to hear yours. So, if you think about the book of Job, we've worked it through this whole quarter, what would you say? That was something that just really rang my bell. You can have as many as you want.
As many as I want. There is a beauty to the consistency and persistency of faith in Job that I love and admire.
Okay.
And his ability to continue to question when he doesn't have understanding.
I like that.
Yeah. I think sometimes I get a little wishy-washy, you know, and Job doesn't. In the face of the worst experiences he'll ever have, he continues to hold on to God and say, "Why? Help me understand."
Yeah. Good. Dave?
I'll throw one down here that when I think of Job, it's a fairly sobering thought that the lives we live are evidence even into eternity. In other words, that there is another dimension, a supernatural dimension, where our lives can give evidence the way we live. I get that from the beginning of Job, where God says, "Have you considered my servant down there?"
Let me piggyback there with one of my points about here, the great controversy theme. And here I'm going to quarrel with your friend Elihu again.
You like to do that.
I like to do that, yeah.
And he's now become your friend,
he
Jen.
He is my friend.
But Elihu says in Job 35, 6, 7, and 8, "If you sin, how does that affect him? If your sins are many, what does that do to him? If you are righteous, what do you give to him? Or what does he receive from your hand? Your wickedness only affects humans like yourself, and your righteousness only other people." I would like to quarrel with Elihu there and say there is a much broader spectrum. What we do or say is, in fact, part of the great struggle between good and evil.
Yeah.
And just as God looked down and said, "Have you seen my man Job?" He wants to look down here at Dev, at Dave, at Jen, at Alden. Have you seen my people?
Yeah.
They've standed firm. So that idea of the great struggle between good and evil, where a man bullied all the way through but still stands firm, is important for me. Yep. Okay, Jen, you got any more? Or did you shoot your wad already?
I've already hung the moon, huh? I like also that the questions that Job asks are not completely satisfied, but he's willing to continue the dialogue with God and to say, "Yeah, I didn't get that, but I'm willing to wrestle with that aspect of it now." And
okay.
I like that. I'm one who wants to know all the answers, and to have them, and to have them yesterday would have been good. So I appreciate that he still hangs in there and is still asking and listens to what God has to say intently.
Now, what do you think about Job's relationship to his friends? Could he have been nicer?
I think maybe he needs to find nicer friends.
Could they have been nicer?
Right, exactly. Exactly. I think maybe he could reinvest in some friendships.
Well, then another takeaway for me is I love the end of Job, where God basically says, "Job, you're a big man with all the answers. Why don't you step out here, and I'm going to ask you some questions, you know?" And as you said, the score was 88-0, Job having zero. I like that portion of Job because it reminds me that I am human and there is God who is supernatural. And, you know, the distinction between God and Job there, I think, is it's done in a way that I find very helpful, that I may not have all the answers to everything, but I don't need to because I'm only a human being. I'm not a divine. And I'm grateful there is a divine person who does know the answer to those questions.
And I think the most amazing section where God really nails Job is in chapter 40, where he says, verse 7, "Brace yourself like a man, and I will question you, and you shall answer me. Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? Do you have an arm like God's, and can your voice thunder like his? Then adorn yourself with glory and splendor, and clothe yourself in honor and majesty. Unleash the fury of your wrath. Look at all who are proud and bring them low. Look at all who are proud and humble them. Crush the wicked where they stand. Bury them all in the dust together. Shroud their faces in the grave. Then I myself will admit to you that your own right hand can save you. Just a theodicy. Hey, if you can show, I mean, a theophany. If you can do a theophany, Job, then
go for it. Let's see what it looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I'll throw out one more here. Is that, I am profoundly moved by the fact that there are multiple instances in the Bible where people are challenged by suffering, but they believe in God anyway.
Yes.
Habakkuk is that way.
Yep.
Job is that way. Jesus is that way. They are in the midst of intense suffering and even feel abandoned, and yet they persist in faith. And I would hope that in my journey in life, if my circumstances become adverse, I would be among those who did that.
Yeah. Good. One more I would add to the list. I would put under the heading the effect of bad theology on well-meaning friends.
Well, you'll have to talk about that one, Alden, because I don't know what you mean.
Well, the bad theology is a strict reward scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you have well-meaning friends. It sounds to me like the three friends really intended to be helpful.
Yes.
So yeah. My question is, and this is, I think, a question for us, to what extent do Christians have a responsibility to others to share a gracious theology that would allow them to be more gracious with one another?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I tussle with that all the time. If, many devout conservatives are so frightened that something's going to fall apart, see, and that makes them do all kinds of strange things. Once they can see the peace. I remember one summer, many years ago, when I was teaching summer school class, at the same time that Malcolm Maxwell, who was alive then at that time, was teaching summer school class, and there was an older woman who walked out of a classroom. I don't remember exactly the circumstances, but she was just bubbling over. She says, "My, how I wish I had taken these classes earlier before I had my kids."
Mm.
And she told us that she had been warned about coming up here. But she says it has been such a wonderful experience, and to be able to teach things where people say, "I want to serve God more faithfully, and I just wish I could do that." That's the reward of good teaching that comes. Now, there are others that we don't always work on, but that is the kind of thing. So I wish we could find a way of sharing a better theology so that others can be gracious as well.
I have one more for you, Alden.
I
made it a while ago here. I don't remember exactly when, but that in the Western world, we tend to separate theory and practice.
Uh-huh.
We tend to think that, I need to create a cohesive and maybe even perfect collection of theories, and if I have those, then I am right and how I live is secondary to that. And I find some people who have their doctrinal houses in perfect, and I use the word perfect in quotation, they have it in perfect order, but as we mentioned a couple of times already this quarter, is that that's not the goal of living. The goal of living is to have a good set of beliefs and understandings that are lived, that you have to link theory with practice. And if practice does not follow theory, you have disjointed your faith. And you mentioned, and I remember that, the parable of the sheep and goats. It's one of the most powerful sermons I ever heard, when the man who used to run the Christian Aid Center here in town pointed out that the judgment in that story hinges on one simple fact. Did you care for the destitute? Not did you have your doctrinal house in order, and I'm not dismissing doctrinal houses. They are very important because doctrines form the ideological framework around religious communities. Mm-hmm. Gather, but if it doesn't translate into righteous action, there is something wrong with your faith. That's what I learned from the story of Job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gandhi says that he says, "I love your Christ, but not your Christians, for they are so unlike your Christ."
Yeah.
And I think Christ lived a life of honor and diligence, and Job did as well. Mm-hmm. And if we're not, if the theology and the practice don't adjudicate, if they don't line up, then the world does not have any evidence of Christ at work in our lives.
Yeah.
Another interesting wrinkle of that parable of the sheep and the goats, some people said, well, that's just salvation by works. But it's not salvation by works, because the righteous didn't even know.
Yeah, and that's an astonishing piece of that story. Yeah. That
they
surprise.
Didn't even know that they were doing that. They weren't trying to build up any brownie points. They said, well, when did we do that?
You want another one?
Yep.
In the book of Job, we learn that there is redemption in the end for those who persist in faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it may come in surprising ways.
That's very true.
True.
Well, there's one more quotation, I think, because the whole book of Job is really fairly crucial for understanding the Adventist sense of the great controversy, the great struggle between good and evil. And one of my favorite C.S. Lewis quotes has to do with the miracles, but it's in his essay on the efficacy of prayer. And he quotes an experienced Christian as saying, "I've seen many striking answers to prayer, and more than one that I thought miraculous, but they usually come at the beginning, before conversion, or soon after it. As the Christian life proceeds, they tend to be rarer. The refusals, too, are not only more frequent, they become more unmistakable, more emphatic." And then in his own voice he says, "Does God then forsake just those who serve him best? Well, he who served him best of all said near his tortured death, 'Why hast thou forsaken me?' When God becomes man, that man of all others is least comforted by God at his greatest need. There is a mystery here which, even if I had the power, I might not have the courage to explore. Meanwhile, little people like you and me, if our prayers are sometimes granted beyond all hope and probability, had better not draw hasty conclusions to our own advantage. If we were stronger, we might be less tenderly treated. If we were braver, we might be sent with far less help to defend far more desperate posts in the great battle."
And why do you like that quote, Alden?
It has the setting of the great controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And it also breaks the relationship between just because you pray for something, you ought to get it. See?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And that idea there that, you know, that the specific answers to prayer may come, the more they are at the beginning, then they become more frequent, more unmistakable. The refusals are more frequent, more unmistakable, more emphatic. See, I think that tracks with a certain honesty.
I think so.
And so when you have the story of Jesus, you know, where nobody, the heavens are silent, when you have Job and the heavens are silent, you have an amazing testimony there to what the story of the great controversy can mean. So if I were to ask one final rhetorical question for no response from you, wise guys, can God's people find in the book of Job the kind of courage to keep on keeping on as Job did? And I would say certainly so. So thank you very much, Jen and Dave, for your contributions through this quarter. It's been an enriching experience for me to be able to work through you. And I want to thank Jared Miller, our program engineer, for his help. And to all of you for listening in for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.